Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Weekday Wednesday, Tucson, Arizona's number one online radio podcast about all things medical cannabis. Your host, Belle Starr.
And the Cannabis Kid. Our show features news, interviews, and all the latest information about anything and everything medical cannabis related in Tucson, Arizona,
and the world at large. We'd love to hear from you. Please give us a call live at 646-915-8421. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on all social media, or email thctucson@gmail.com.
We would like to thank Tumbleweeds Health Center and Studio C, along with our many sponsors, for hosting our show every week. With the lowest price certifications in town, you'll find hemp products, accessories, and all things related to medical cannabis education.
Visit Tumbleweeds Health Center at 5315 East Broadway Boulevard or online at tumbleweedshealthcenter.com. And remember,
be smart,
be safe,
and educate.
Well,
we've got a full studio today.
Oh my gosh, the greenhouse is overflowing. We've got, you know, Ellen's out there, Oprah's out there, and you get weed, and you get weed.
You're handing it out. Handing out doobies to everybody.
Oh, I was going to say ounces, man.
Ounces.
Handing out pretty little jars and little ribbons and things. We love Oprah. Thanks, Mama O. Being so supportive of us. Woo! How are y'all doing for the new year? Everyone good?
Yes.
Good morning, Grand Island. No strain of the day. Oh, no. That's not a good thing. Oh, my
we
Lord.
We need to work on that.
We do. Our guest is here.
The Netherlands are here.
Oh, my Lord, the Netherlands are back. Happy New Year, Netherlands. We have missed you. Good morning, Tombstone. Good morning, Green Valley. Morning, world. We're here, and we're live. We've got a really fun show today. We have live guests instead of the dead ones we usually have. We have live ones here. Yeah, but we have that. Where is it? Oh, man. There it is. We just got to get, you know. Tech guy, Happy New Year. You're not on it already. But we have Dr. Regina Nelson in the studio with her friend Michael. Wow. We've got some bloggers out there already. We have some sad news. Franco of the Strain Hunters passed away. I didn't know about that. We're very sorry to hear that.
I've even watched a couple of those episodes from Vice.
Yeah.
And that was really an interesting show.
Yeah.
I'm going to read more into that.
Definitely. Wow. Well, no more. 16 was full of untimely deaths at the end of the year. And that was just sad. So we're sorry for all those who lost somebody they loved. And tons of babies were born. We saw twins born, one at 11:59, one at 12:01. Those are fun. They're going to be fighting their whole lives over that one. Anyway, welcome to Weekday Wednesday. It is, for the bestie, January 4th. We're in Tucson. What's our temperature? You know, it's just cold.
It is. It's chilly this morning.
What did Steve say? I don't know. It's just, it's just cold. It was like 30-something when we went for our walk, so that's crazy. Anyway, we've got a couple questions from some bloggers out there, and we have an article, actually, that supports our very question. Thank you, blogger, from the Netherlands. There's a link out there. We love if you go to tumbleweedshealthcenter.com, you can click on the radio show link. It'll take you right to Blog Talk Radio, where you can just take a moment and log in. It only takes 2 seconds, so you can get on there and blog with us, and we send pretty pictures and links and all sorts of stuff. So thanks for sharing the news. We caught malaria. Oof. Not good. Sorry to hear that. Strain Hunters keep going, or
yeah. Well, we have got a great show today. Regina Nelson, Dr. Regina Nelson, one of our favorite.
Yeah.
Yes, one of our favorite.
She's gonna have to do the
favorite doctors.
I'm not a medical doctor.
That's why.
I really don't care. Mentally,
we've got you guys this morning, and we are going to be talking a little bit about cannabis education, everything that you need to know.
But we did have that question from the blogger about driving impaired. That seems to be a big question for people these days. And, you know, it doesn't only apply to cannabis, it applies to everything. But we just don't have the testing for on-spot cannabis things yet. They're trying to make a mechanism of sorts.
They are, but they're not. They're going to have a really difficult time with that because you can't really show impairment. I've been going out and I've been meeting with defense attorneys regarding this very thing because they get people that are above that 5 nanogram rule in Washington or Colorado.
Right.
And in some states like Illinois, if you have any THC in your person, that's an illegal drug. Therefore, you're impaired. That if you're found to have that at the time, you know, from driving. So if you refuse a blood test, your license can be suspended. But there are all these key factors around this to say you can have even active THC in your system, but that doesn't prove impairment.
Right.
It's the onus of the police department to prove impairment because did you take that along with 8 times as much CBD, which they're not testing for, and have no euphoric impact? Did you take that in a juice as a juicing mechanism, and your body has converted it as using the active THC, but you didn't get high because you took it all in as THCA?
Mm-hmm.
And did you take a THCA tincture? Where were you at in the edibles process?
Right.
You may not have been impaired, but you may still have active THC or beginning to have active THC in your system. And so there are all of these different components, and there's really no scientific evidence for it. You can't pull a blood test. I mean, you can pull a blood test, you can tell how many nanograms of active THC are in someone's system, but you can't prove impairment.
Right, yeah. And that's the big thing. You have to improve impairment.
Yeah.
Whether you're on the job or driving or...
Well, workman's comp is another issue where they require a drug test of anybody who's hurt in a workman's comp injury, and if you have THC in your system, then they, again, may use that because it's not for adults over 21 in our state, or you don't have an active medical card, or even if you do, it doesn't matter, and they still may try to exclude your injury based on that.
So currently, they just use the alcohol test. You know, they put the little pen in front of your face, follow this, make you walk the line, say your alphabet backwards, which I don't think any human being can do anyway, regardless of whether or not you're drunk or impaired. That's a hard one. But so there are some tests out there that they're trying. Basically, you know, the question is how to prevent, you know, people driving impaired or, you know, functioning impaired out in the world. And that holds for any medication.
And it does. We're seeing more people having
caffeine,
impairment with pharmaceuticals. They're taking their muscle relaxers or Xanax or these things that aren't even pain, opiates or narcotics.
Right.
And then they're driving and they don't always know what that effect is going to be, or they have a greater effect at that time than expected.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So that's a hard one. And they're working on that. But, you know, again, it's different for everybody because the amount that you have in your system, I could have a ton in my system and be fine. And the next person who doesn't use it all could hit a joint and just freak out and not be able to drive or, whatever.
This past year, there's some really good research that came out of France. They did 3 DUI research projects with cannabis involved in them all. But they were looking at the differences between alcohol and cannabis use. And what they found was you're most risky with alcohol. And with the cannabis, it slows you down a little. You think a little more about the actions you're going to take, and you don't go quite as fast. You don't get quite as aggressive driving, but you still are up there. When you're cannabis only, it typically drops considerably because you're overly cautious. Mostly what they say is you miss your place on the road. You miss your exit because you're kind of on the facial out.
Right.
At that time. But you're not, you know, so it was really interesting to see. And they asked questions of people like, would you drive, based on your impairment level now, would you drive for this reason? Would you drive to take your mother to an emergency room? Would you drive to the store to buy more beer? You know, and they would kind of evaluate that. And, of course, people were like, I totally do that.
So, yeah.
Whereas, like, when they got to the question about, would you drive your mother to an emergency room, the people who were stoned, so they're going, well, I wouldn't really feel comfortable driving right now, so I'd probably just call an ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were thinking it through.
No, 911.
a little bit more. And so that was kind of interesting in their research to see those kind of things. But we have a lot of need around funding for more research of that kind, because other studies that have come out recently do show that medical patients particularly drive better under the influence. They're not impaired, and it improves their driving skills.
They're more focused.
And this is one of the things that concerns me about the impairment laws, because as you talked about, there's a minimum number of tests for most people who are licensed patients or chronically or terminally ill. I have fibromyalgia. Last night I had a hard time walking that because of the storm coming in.
Yeah.
Today I probably would do it fine. Neither time was I too impaired to drive. But I had to see my system actively both times because I'm a patient and I was suffering.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And that's the hard thing. You know, they pull people over, and this is the discrimination about this plant and this program, is that you don't say to somebody, where's your morphine card? Let me see your card.
Yeah.
You carry morphine or Oxy or Dilaudid or
whatever. Show me your list of prescription drugs.
Or what they're on. And you know, we've come to find that, you know, most doctors don't even know what other doctors are prescribing to patients, which is how they trick the system anyway. You know, with the cannabis system, you can't go, you know, to one place without the other place knowing your amount, when you went, when you can have more, when you can't. I mean, it's very strict. So, but we always fall back to just be responsible, please. Keep your medicine locked up, any and all medicine. It's not just cannabis. But you have a responsibility as just a human being to know whether or not you're impaired and know whether or not you should be out there driving. You know, Uber. It's a reason companies like Uber and Lyft and other things have popped up, and, you know, in addition to taxis and things like that. Because, you know, people really are wanting to be more conscious, I think, as we get more into the years of our earth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think most of us have lost someone we care about to a drunk driving accident.
Very much so.
In some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, yeah. Or
too many.
Yeah.
And that's where I think that's really a hard decision, where they're doing, you know, treating it like alcohol. When you think about it, it's not like alcohol at all. It is in a category by itself, and it needs to be treated that way.
Yeah.
And it needs to be, all the things need to be looked at in every single possible perspective. Because, I mean, we're talking about a lot of people using this plant right now in this world that get many, many benefits from it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's non-toxic. And it's helping people every day. And I think that's what they are afraid of, is that we won't be relying on them to make us feel in this way. It's kind of, in a way, taking us back for our own responsibility and our own accountability.
Yeah, which, you know, when you're impaired, that's a hard thing to be accountable, and just, you can't think, you don't know where you are, and especially when you're on drugs that are, you know, hallucinogenic, and you're seeing frogs or whatever else you're seeing, and you don't, you know, reality's not an item anymore.
Right, and it goes back to what Regina said from the patient saying that would you drive in
right,
it's
conditions.
That conscious state that you're going into thinking, well, okay,
but
I'm
are
gonna
you
do
thinking
that.
When
yeah.
you're drunk, or are you thinking when
you're
using?
Well, the purpose of alcohol
using
is to numb your thought process.
Exactly.
Cannabis is a consciousness lifting.
It sure
and
is. It's almost the opposite of that. Yeah, it helps you really hone in and focus on things. So, we have a good article here, though, from, where's this article from? Criminal what? Anyway. Driving under the influence of marijuana in Arizona, criminaldefenselawyer.com. I don't know why I do that. It's the Yahoo thing. It's just kind of fun. I just can't help myself Wednesday mornings. Driving under the influence of marijuana is a crime in Arizona. This article explains the penalties imposed for DUI violations, but other laws regarding marijuana possession may also apply to the driver and passengers. Ooh, interesting. Also, while Arizona allows medical marijuana use under limited circumstances, it is still a crime to drive after such use, as explained below. This article actually has a link to the Arizona medical marijuana laws, probably from the State Department's website. So it is unlawful to drive a vehicle, one, while under the influence of any substance that impairs the driver's mental or physical faculties, two, while there is any drug or its metabolite in the person's body. This means that the mere presence of a drug in the driver's body is grounds for a DUI charge regardless of whether the driver is actually impaired. Penalties for driving under the influence. Penalties vary according to whether it's a first or subsequent conviction as follows. Your first conviction.
All right, first conviction. At least 10 days in jail and fines of at least $1,250. Additional penalties may include required participation in drug treatment program, license suspension, community service, probation for up to 5 years, or being ordered to attach an ignition interlock device to the driver's vehicle, which I think that is only for alcohol at this time.
Your second conviction, within 84 months, at least 90 days in jail, 30 days of which is not eligible for probation or suspension of sentence, fines of at least $3,000, at least 30 hours of community service, license suspension for a year, and the requirement of attaching an ignition interlock device to the driver's vehicle. Additional penalties may include required participation in the drug treatment program or additional probation.
Third or substantial conviction with 7 years with suspended license or under certain or other circumstances by law. At least 4 months in prison, fines up to $150, license suspension for 3 years, probation for up to 5 years, and additional penalties may include forfeiture of vehicle or required participation in a drug treatment program.
Yeah. All right, then. Yeah. And if, did you say that? Additional penalties apply if a child under the age of 15 was in the vehicle at the time of the offense. Anyone operating a vehicle in Arizona is deemed to have given consent to a test to determine the presence of controlled substance. Refusal to submit the test may result in a driver's license suspension for 12 months. Evidence of refusal is admissible in any legal action or proceeding. So, and then they offer to get legal help. But there you have it. You just have to be careful. I mean, you know, anything can impair you. Caffeine, alcohol, not enough sleep.
That's a big one.
And that is a really big one, especially for, you know, long-distance drivers out there, truckers, and, you know,
people that are on pain meds are big every day.
On the road,
that are on the road,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So,
Dr. Nelson is here. Yeah, where's that clap track? There we go. Yeah. How are you this morning? Are you waking up?
I'm waking up
now. We're all sitting on the cozy couches having some coffee and edibles and smokables and donuts. Oh, my gosh. Sugar crashing.
I should have one.
The show's over. We're going to be just gone. Nap time.
Yeah.
Tell us what you've been up to. You just became a doctor. Congratulations.
I'm very proud of you.
I
defended my dissertation recently, and in the final stages of that being published, and then hopefully I'm here with Michael Browning, as you guys knew him as well beforehand, but we're going to be working over the next month on putting this into some articles. I'm really hoping for like a New England Journal of Medicine article but I think that there's some good information to get out in mainstream media as well, and that's something that Michael's really talented at and can be really helpful with, because what I did is I looked at the medical cannabis recommendation process and the experiences of those who participate in that process, primarily physicians and patients. And I ended up interviewing 20 patients and 12 physicians across the nation about their experiences. And, it kind of boils down to the same thing as this drunk driving. As long as this is a controlled substance, and it remains a Schedule I controlled substance, and we're going to continue to have these issues because there's so many conflicts between the federal and the state level, and we're not doing anything from an education standpoint to really normalize this yet at this point. And so these are areas, you know, that kind of needed to be looked at. And again, in my university finds my research so intriguing because it's kind of on the outside. I'm not your normal PhD student in that. So few at this point would be really, willing to do what I've done and go without fellowships or scholarships and claw and fight their way through it to really be looking at something that they love. Instead, it's much easier to take another, you know, great topic and kind of go with it. Though you still love this one. But I thought it was really important. My journey as a patient is, you know, we've shared over the years. And then, you know, it led me to establish the ECS Therapy Center. ECS stands for endocannabinoid system. And that's a step for most people to still to really understand, but it puts us on that same level in that we all have an endocannabinoid system. You know, even Sully here.
Yeah, my boy.
And the more that we learn from a science standpoint, we're not at all right with cannabis. And we've got to change those things. And they affect a lot of things like DUI laws. This was one of the things that was brought out in my dissertation by patients. A number of them have been stopped and hassled. A couple of them, while they haven't necessarily been charged with a DUI, that didn't mean that they didn't spend some time in a jail cell and they didn't lose their meds in the search and seizure process, even if they were legal.
Wow.
You know, and have their medical card with them. And so there's a lot of things that we need to fix around this that most people aren't looking at. And I think it's really important for people to understand the journey that most people, these are chronically, again, and terminally ill people that are taking these journeys. They're really desperate and really fighting. And, you know, we've got to make some changes in these systems.
Well, and oftentimes these journeys are taking them away from their family and their loved ones, their friends, and they're moving into communities that they know no one. And they're experimenting with, you know, a plant that they don't know much about, trying to desperately save their lives. I mean, it's a scary situation for a lot of people.
It is, for themselves,
watching their children go through things. You've had a lot of experience with children in cannabis.
Well, yeah, but I'm a medical cannabis refugee, and I've worked with them all over. I know Michael's asking last night, is that prolific here in Arizona, too? And it is. And he's looking to work on a documentary about that experience. So why don't you tell him a little bit about that?
Right. It's great that you brought that up. Bell Star. Yes, the medical cannabis refugee in America is the subject of this documentary. After having been introduced to a few through through Regina and through a world premiere at the recent Cinebus Film Festival that we had, first annual in Manitou Springs, we were able to just really be honored by a local Colorado Springs filmmaker telling the story, Miguel. So Miguel in quotes, Mike Wise, W-I-S-E. It's on IMDb. He world premiered a film called Illegally Alive, which is part of the tag phrase from this from the subject. A young boy, Colton Turner, who came from Illinois to Colorado to address his pain or his Crohn's through cannabis therapy. And I believe his tagline is, I'd rather be illegally alive than legally dead.
Yeah.
And so he's created a bit of a media storm in Colorado and Colorado Springs, and has spoken around quite a bit on behalf of cannabis therapy and the story of these refugees that basically is their family. The Turners were torn apart. One part of the family, the mother and the kids, stayed in Illinois while the father and Colton came out to Colorado and did just exactly what you're talking about, experimenting with this plant they have very little knowledge of and are taking huge risks around people, you know, not around their support system.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So those are the stories we hope to tell and really illuminate this aspect of what a lot of people think has already been taken care of. We voted in, you know, we've got these programs, everything's hunky-dory, and really this normalization that Regina talked about is what has to take place, because the undue amount of regulation on this one particular aspect of our lives, which should be like it's supposed to be regulated like alcohol, but should really be brought into the clinical area and also let people just grow their own.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's, you know, again, so many stories of people moving from all over. And now, you know, I've been recently talking to people from Florida who moved to Colorado, and they've been in Colorado 2, 3, 4, 5 years, depending upon their needs and, you know, for just medicalized.
Right.
But as they're looking back, they're like, well, I still can't go home.
Right.
It's going to be a year or two till there's medicine.
Yeah.
Are they going to have the medicine that I now know I need?
Right.
Like going to the doctor is a little different because in Florida they're going to require that you update your recommendation every 45 days.
Whoa.
So what I'm hearing from patients is they're going to be paying $30 or $40 a month every month all year long so they can meet the requirements of this program.
Wow.
The, you want to, and well, there's other things within Florida too. Once you apply and you get renewed for terminally ill, you have a 90-day waiting period. I know a lot of people that can't get to the 30 days or something to get their car, much less waiting for 90 after that far. I mean, we're losing people in a lot of places that it takes, because it takes so long. I just came from Illinois over the last year. Waco came out to visit me there. You know, I have a team, Jamie and Mickey, are still going strong in Peoria. And the thing is, I've been a patient in New Mexico, in California, in Colorado, but in Illinois, when I'm the one going to the hospital and training doctors and speaking with them, I couldn't get a recommendation myself. And they have a DUI law that if you have any metabolites in your system and you're not a registered patient in their state, you're busted in jail. You know, you're intoxicated in their opinion. So it's been a year worrying about driving to appointments and taking care of things. What's going to happen if some crazy drug hits me?
Right.
Because I don't have any protection within that state. So, you know, coming back to Colorado was like this huge sigh of relief.
Yeah.
And now on this trip with Michael, what we're trying to do is put together a tour for this coming spring. I'm coming up with a second edition of the ECS Therapy Companion Guide, which is still available on Amazon.
Excellent.
But we're doing a change in title to the Survivor's Guide on Medical Cannabis. I think it's more apropos if you're looking to survive. I see so many survivors in this. How, why is it important? You know, and it's a similar format, but it's a little bit expanded. I've really learned more about dosing in the last year since that last book came out because it's been out to thousands of people now, and I'm getting feedback from them, and I'm feeling really confident on the dosing targets that I've given and that they're working well for people. And a lot more people, because of that, have come forward with their conditions too, which were in the book before, and now I've got added conditions and new things to kind of add into that. So we're hoping to have that ready to launch by mid-February and in March and April to do some book tours and book signings here. But we'd like to, we're looking to get a number of people, not just in the industry involved, but to really kind of push it outside that, because Michael would also, he's got a great film that he showed at the film festival in Manitou called Grassroots from the UK. And it's a patient's journey, and it's not that different. It's so familiar to people, and I think that it would, you know, it would just really be touching in the community.
And told from the UK perspective, you know, where it's still completely illegal there, even though they've got their patient rights groups there. This particular MS patient is the subject of the film, and the filmmaker Dale Beaumont Brown came out from England to the Colorado premiere. He had just world premiered it in England, but came to our film festival there in Manitou and was just a wonderful presence there. And the story itself, he actually won the audience award for story, Grand Story Award, because it's a documentary with such a personal, touching narrative. And that's what we hear over and over again. Is these personal stories that just really touch our hearts, and it's such courage, it's such bravery, and to see the way Dale told that story with such a deft brush, and we would like to take that out on tour and kind of do this pairing. Like Regina said, she's got a dissertation that is just amazing. Her dissertation committee, or the college, set a record for attendees. attendees on that call. There's a call that they go through, and there was like almost 40 people on the call, which was a school record for how many people attuned to the PhD. And so doing a redesign on the titles that she already has on Amazon. She's got 3 cannabis-related titles on Amazon already, and doing some cover redesigns on those, and also some specialty publishing projects with certain, education-oriented cannabis companies, and really meeting with those companies in the Western states through this book signing tour, and also like to take this grassroots film on a little cinnabis screening tour that may culminate in Montreal. You want to talk about?
Yeah, so the International Cannabinoid Research Society Symposium this year is in Montreal in late June, and I have been so blessed to be a part of that for this would be my 4th year. Started in Vivino, Italy, and then they came to Nova Scotia. This last half summer I spent time in Poland, and it's really great. It's funny, because there's scientists, I'm this crazy social scientist that just doesn't seem to fit at all. In the first couple of years, they were just kind of like, who is she? And I presented posters and talked to people. And it's so funny now, Rafi almost threw him back. Go ask Regina Nelson. She's the one who can, like, nail dosing.
Oh,
and
it
just feels so good.
I'm so glad you just said that, because ever since you brought this up, I wanted to ask you about dosing. It's the biggest question that we get, because it's not standardized yet for people.
It should be.
And it will be soon enough. Mm-hmm. However, right now, we have families moving across the country to try things.
No,
they
have no
clue. It's not like you go to Target and grab a Tylenol off the shelf or whatever your choice is, and this 250 milligrams each tiny little piece of pill.
Yep.
It's not the case, They give you a candy bar, and they're like, hey, some guys are like, oh, eat it. Just eat the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then grandma comes back the next day, and she's like, I'm never touching this stuff again. And we're like, wait, you didn't listen to us in the first place. Start small.
Well, this is the thing. I remember my mom telling me they bought a CBD sucker, or it was given to them at a dispensary. Well, what she doesn't realize is it said it was CBD, and it was, but it was also THC, and they just handed it to their 3-year-old who had brain cancer. But about 5 minutes later, she was just a little zombie.
Yeah.
And really freaking out. We out with 150 milligrams.
Oh, my
sucker.
God.
And she's thinking, and people didn't know then. And that's, again, why a lot of this 10 milligram is coming. It's around the newbies and the medical side, and the rec people that just casually use and think that they can really tolerate. The truth is, I can take 150 milligram sucker without any problem. Not everybody can. I couldn't do that early on, even if it's rich in CBD. So there's a lot of those things. So I tend to say, despite whatever the cannabinoids are, you look at 1 milligram per kilo target dose, and you know that you just start smaller than that and slowly titrate to that. But that's where you get a therapeutic level.
Yeah.
And that was coming from, again, being around these scientists and hearing them and getting very little of all the technical talk they gave me, but that 1 and 5 and 10 and 20, 1, 1, 5, 1, 5, 10, I get that, and I ask questions around it. And what I'm seeing is whether people microdose and do little tiny doses often throughout the day, or they do 3 or 4decent sized doses eventually depending on their condition. Once they get to 1, they've had some success and they're overall feeling pretty good. Mm-hmm. They're still in pharma, which is, I'm not saying everybody's going to become pharma free even, but a lot of people, that's their thing is, they're still on quite a bit of pharma, but they're ready to start weaning it because they're feeling better. And they may need more. If they're a pain patient, put them in that 5 milligram per kilo.
Right.
And that's not what I take per day. I'm not a big person. I take about 350 milligrams a day, which would be about in that 5 milligram per kilo radius. Cancers of 10 to 20. We've had this one. I was curious why we have this 1 gram per day thing, and they take 60 grams in 90 days. Titrate yourself up a gram a day. Well, that gram a day puts most adults between 10 and 20 milligrams per kilo. And that's when the animal studies show that there's effect. And you see some people get a huge effect at the 10 level, and you see some people get to the 20 and stay there a long time having a slower effect. Why is that? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Scientists aren't yet anywhere near being able to tell us that.
Right.
We're so far ahead in anecdotal evidence compared
right.
to, you know, of course, clinical trials or anything like that. And we're still trying to figure out how the endocannabinoid system even works. My understanding is, it's a rumor I hear from the scientists, is that there's another endogenous cannabinoid, like anandamide and 2-AG, that they found and are in the process of naming and learning about. But I don't know more than that. I think it'll be a big June explosion at ICRS.
Yeah,
and taking us back
exciting.
To that, one of the things I'm going to be asking and putting in a request to do this year is to bring grassroots to the ICRS and do a screening for that scientific community. Because there's about 500 or 600 people that will be at that are all, again, people
right.
that I've cited in their research,
right.
and that if you're reading any kind of trial work,
right.
they're doing, but they don't really understand their effect on humanity. And I think that's really important. And I think it's one of the things that I've brought to that group. They've all, you know, talked to me about, you link us to what's really going on.
Right.
And, you know, Raphael Meshulam just puts me down as like, tell me a patient's story. Tell me another. How much are they taking? And when I can lay out, well, this little boy's taking 60 milligrams per dose 4 times a day. He's like, wow, that's a lot of THC. Well, it is, but that's what the studies would indicate. And he's like, cool.
Yeah.
Or, you know, but he even feels that. You know, I get this from Vicente DiMarzio, Ethan Russo, all of the scientists are like, wow, that's a lot of THC.
Yeah.
But the truth is, it is, in the sense that they're thinking, if you
right.
give somebody 1 milligram per kilo right out of the gate, they're so stoned and maybe hallucinogenically stoned.
Mm-hmm.
But if you start that at 2 to 5 milligrams, 3 to 4 times a day, and build microdose,
mm-hmm.
you know, and build it to a comfort level that you're comfortable with. Usually by the time people hit that first target, they're starting to feel empowered finally in their own care.
Right.
And that's important because they're also becoming more conscious, and it becomes things, you know, my study shows things like change of diet, change in exercise, meditation, other yoga, your mood, because you're feeling better, less inflammation, less depression, you're sleeping, you're eating, you're pooping, you're doing all the things that your body starts needing to do. And while you're not, again, cured, I don't like that word, I don't use that word, I don't think it's even effective in conventional medicine. I don't think anything is cured. Maybe a common cold is, but it'll come, you know, you'll get another one.
Yeah.
But
maybe you're approaching homeostasis in your body for the first time.
Right.
Exactly. And, you know, again, I tell people, you were getting chronically ill for a very long time, even before you started feeling symptoms, before you went to the doctor and all these things. Cancer's the same way. You cancer for a long time before you actually have a mass tumor.
Right.
And so it's a healing journey. And, you know, that getting that quality of life is what's really important.
It is.
And so that's what we focus on.
It creates a ripple effect
mm-hmm.
in
oh.
your life.
Not just for you, but
absolutely.
For everybody in it. Everybody in it, yeah. And, you know, when you start small with the microdose and you talk about just start to get a little bit in your system, you don't want to overwhelm yourself. And that's what people come into the health center all the time and they say, I don't want to get high. And I talk to them about their pain and what's going on, and they tear up and grab a box of Kleenex or give them a hug and say, you know, what's wrong with a little happy? And they giggle and they go, nothing, you know, and then you just kind of make them feel comfortable in it because the high, it is okay. And the high we try to describe as maybe the onset of the medication kicking in. It may last 30 minutes. It may last longer or less. We don't know. It depends. And it could be various things. It could be happiness, it could be focus, it could be creativity, it could be many things. It could be sleep, which is what you need, you know, it could just hit you like Carmelicious and take you down in 15 minutes, you know. We all have our story.
Zoning out, you know, that time
to just
let your body
and
feel.
And most of these people are on opiates or
right.
something even like a benzo or something that's going to have a euphoric effect anyway that's different. So I asked them that too. I said, you don't have any euphoria from your pain medications? They're all like, oh no, they just that. It's going to be different.
Yeah, it's a different type.
And
yeah.
People are scared of that. Again, there are ways they can do that. Starting people, I think the salves and topicals are a great way to start people that are scared of this because they're so afraid of the high, and they don't think a topical will have effect. We did this weekend with a friend of Waco's, and she was teasing me one night about the cannabis works for everything. And the next day she started to trigger a migraine. She says she was muscular, then ocular, and she's been in the migraine. When the muscular started, he put some fat by me on her. And she goes, okay, it worked. I have to admit, like, I was so snotty last night, but it worked. And that was it. And she goes, I didn't get high. Suddenly now she's willing to consider a low, very low dose of tincture,
right,
edibles long term that can maybe stymie that off. And then the
Allow your body to heal.
I was telling her, one of my qualifying conditions when I started in New Mexico under pain would have been migraines. I was having regular migraines.
Yeah.
That was 6 years ago. Yeah. In the last 4 years, I've had 2 migraines.
Oh, my gosh.
And I had one of them this summer, and it was because I got sick.
Yeah.
And it was just this thing that just triggered, and I mean, I went down with the, you know, I was in a dark room with a thing pulled over my hand. I took as much oil as I could take, and it was a lot. And I knocked myself kind of out purposely.
Yeah.
But when I woke up, I had the migraine hangover, not the migraine anymore. And it was enough to remind me how absolutely sucky those are.
Yeah.
And the level and intensity of the pain that you go through. So I had a lot of empathy for her, right, you know. And but I just told her, I said, smile it. 2 and 4 years, and she was like, I had 2 this week. I know. You know, like, it can change, but it changes over time. The first year, I was still having them at least once a month. The next year, they were more quarterly, lighter. I could kick them out. I could knock myself out with cannabis oil and kind of just
be. Yeah.
And they still sucked, but it was quicker. And it's kind of like my fibromyalgia. I had a really good flare last night. My pain levels went up. But today I'm pretty good. I feel like I have a fibro hangover, a little foggy still. But that used to take me down. I couldn't function or talk for 2 or 3 days. I'd try to get words out, but they didn't make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got to be able, you got to journal through this as well so that you learn your patterns and you see what is working for you from the medicine standpoint. But you also start to be, on bad days, you can look back and go, wow, I've made some progress.
Yeah.
And that means a lot to most people.
Yeah. So how, when someone brings a child to you, how do you know how to use
dosing? It's the same as for an adult. You're targeting 1 milligram per kilo. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. Kids get to a therapeutic dose like that because they're little. It doesn't take very much. Most of them only need 10 or 12 milligrams a day to get to that.
Mm.
And so if you're starting them with 2 to 5, you're going to be there by the end of the day. It's why you see so much control in seizures or you see effects on cancer. They get to therapeutic levels faster and they tolerate the euphoria way better than adults in the sense that adults are scared or will fight with it. Kids will just
rest.
And the thing is, you don't, most of the parents, a lot of times, I don't ever see them stoned. I saw them stoned on morphine. I saw them stoned on whatever.
Right.
You know, every time I gave them this medicine, this happened, and I don't see that with this. And I'm thinking cannabinoids, whether it's a 1-to-1 THC to CBD, whether it's an 8-to-1 CBD to THC, whether it's just plain THC-rich cannabinoid profile. And take a look at those and start seeing how they go. Of course, with children, I always try to start people 1-to-1.
Yeah.
Because most people are coming for the CBD. But the truth is, once they get comfortable with that and the parent starts adding CBD, pretty soon they stop and they're like, nope, it's the wrong way. And they start adding THC and they find that's the right way. And I see that more often than I see the CBD. CBD works really well with Dravet syndrome, which Charlotte Biggie had. It's a specific seizure disorder with specific types of seizures. But other types of seizures respond better to THC. And the truth is, even Charlotte Biggie and most Dravet patients get some THC.
Yes.
And it's greatly effective with the autism spectrum issues that go along with that particular syndrome. And we see that across a lot of the seizure disorders that kids fall into the autism spectrum. And for that, for sure, the parents always push for the THC after they get comfortable with this. Again, they come for the CBD.
Right.
Because what they've heard, the CBD, these hemp oils on their own, one hemp, every scientist that you respect will tell you hemp is not medicine. Hemp is food. Cannabis is medicine. So the CBD that's being called for medical plants, like Charlotte's Web was 4 years ago, really good. That that's being cultivated now in the hemp field, not so good. They have to take a lot more to get the same CBD. It's a lower grade difference. I mean, it's not different, but it is. When you don't have any THC, THC is the only active cannabinoid. So it activates your receptors. CBD only stimulates them. If all of your receptors are inactive, it's stimulating nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to activate your receptors to have some stimulation.
They work together.
There's this synergistic entourage effect that, again, we'll see how machine learning is talking about. That's really important.
Yeah. And that's the thing. People, they don't quite understand, why you would use something that makes you high.
There's a lot of things that make us high. People run all the time, and that runner's
that
high
exercise.
Is CB1 stimulation.
Exactly.
And then a lot of people do it for the runner's high.
Yeah.
It feels good if I go work out for 2 hours. I feel great.
Yeah.
Of course you do. It's like you smoked a big sativa joint.
Yeah, no kidding. And you're ready to pull the universe up.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
A few years ago, I went and had a booth at the Rock and Roll Marathon, so many of them were like, I love it. Whatever it is, because it doesn't get, I just get there so much faster.
Yeah.
Well, you've opened all those receptors, and so when you start running, it's just active and going, and you get right in the zone.
Yeah. What about dosing for specific ailments? Where are we in that? Like, if someone says, I have fibromyalgia, I have Alzheimer's, I have arthritis, what strain, how much?
I get out of the strain stuff. I don't go there because I think a lot of things, I say follow your nose, different things work for different people. When we're looking at things like tinctures and extracts and other things, when you're kind of making your own medicine to some degree in some way, like you put it in capsules and you're making it with things. I think, again, you start at that no more than 5 to 10 milligrams per dose. You target that 1 milligram per kilo. You'll find in there, again, if you're tracking and journaling yourself, what strains are going to work better for you.
Right.
So many people that don't want to get high also don't want to smoke or vaporize. So we're looking at edible options. And so then understanding sativa from indica is important in there.
Yep.
Then understanding how fiber is going to fit. Starting with small doses, understanding that if they eat it, it's going to take longer.
Mm-hmm.
If they use a tincture, they get some immediate relief. These are the kind of technical things I give people. I target them to that 1 milligram per kilo because that's where you get a therapeutic level. That's where all the animal studies start. And every study says, but at that point, the euphoria, the THC is too much. Well, it is initially, but if you titrate to that. We know to titrate to a lot of drugs. There are a lot of pharmaceuticals that we titrate to. You pick, 5 milligrams this week, 10 the next, 20 the next, and then you're at your therapeutic level or something.
Right.
But the same kind of, thought with this. And so what I tell people is to make your baseline of that edible, tincture, and then use salves, smoking, and vaping on top of that for anything breakout.
Right.
Because the topical, you're not really getting a blood uplet. You're finding it into your system, but it's hugely relating to your, at a cellular level and your muscles and other things. But you want to get that base in. So it's kind of, a lot of people work with just cannabis oil and coconut oil. And in my book, the UCS Therapy Companion Guide, I give dilution to that. So you can take a couple ounces of coconut oil per gram, and then 1 ml, ends up being like 8 milligrams. Excuse me. And you can break that down. You can take a half an ml. So you need 2. You do a lot of different things. If you put it in a capsule and swallow it, it's going to take 1 hour, 2 hours to uptake. If you squirt it in the pocket of your jaw, you're going to be really quick. If you put it in the fridge, you can make a suppository out of it by making it hard.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people do that, particularly with rectal cancers, prostate cancers, IBS, and gastric issues.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody has a head injury or a seizure, it's a real good way to get medicine into them without having to do that orally. You get a great uptake. You get it right into that big artery that goes there, but you get this real serenity with it. Way different than smoking a joint. Most people, a lot of people, are like, I don't even feel it. It doesn't function.
It's such an individual journey. That's one thing that I think the farm industry does to us and has conditioned us to that, their dosing standard. So it disempowers us as our own health practitioner. So this plant is very threatening to them because they would like us all to not be empowered. And we see that in patient after patient after patient, that as they take on their own titration, if you will, their own personal titration, how are they going to get it into their body and how much and what's comfortable and what's healing is such an individual thing. And it's so empowering. They just really, that was kind of the ripple effect we touched on earlier, is that it does it. It goes into meditation. It goes into the fact that they're eating means they're eating healthier. The fact that they're sleeping means they're doing activity.
Well, they're regenerating their bodies and their cells are getting nutrition that they haven't had in a while, and that helps healing. And it really does.
One of the pharmacists that I see here kind of gave me this analogy, and they use it over and over with patients. Because if you think about a lake, when they're at the right levels, everything is balanced and everything is healthy. Cells are nothing but little bitty lakes in your body. And so if you're feeling them, and again, you've got that active level of THC in there, well, that, you know, it's at 1 milligram per kilo, that's your first start of being therapeutic. That's the first chance for you to determine, is your lake healthy and balanced? If it's not, do you need more? What we usually see is you can't get to 1 milligram per kilo by smoking only as an adult. It's not possible because you're just getting the small percentage. So I see a lot of big construction guys, a lot of pain issues, back, car wrecks or the construction work, and they smoke all day long. And it's this acute relief. As soon as we get them into edibles, they come back to me like, wow, I only smoke like a quarter a week now. Like, I didn't even know.
Right.
And it was, everyone thought they were addicted to smoking marijuana. That's all they did. But what they were addicted to was the acute relief. And once they got some long-term relief,
right,
they weren't reaching for that joint because they're like, hey, feel good.
Yeah.
And so it's a difference and it's a change. And so I keep, again, that one, that baseline in my system, too. There's certain times, like last night, the smoke out leader, it brought my pain level
down
so fast. Yeah. I was really flaring when we left the restaurant.
Yeah.
And it was just, I hadn't been that kind of pain in a while, and it just knocked it out. But the smoking helped me because it gave me that acute relief so I could shake off some of the symptoms and actually rest and sleep.
Right.
And heal.
And let the edibles.
The edibles we had and the capsules before bed.
There you go. Which is why a lot of people do concentrate. People are afraid to concentrate. And I heard someone today, I think they had like stage 4 cancer, and they said it was the only thing that hit their pain. And I was like, wow, okay.
Well,
so concentrates, people think, oh, they're just for fun, you want to get really high, blah, blah, blah.
No.
Absolutely
not. If smoking a joint is like Tylenol,
do what you want to do.
Dabbing is like
Dilaudid.
Yeah, exactly.
And I have seen people come on fentanyl patches and Dilaudid, where they're taking 8 milligrams of Dilaudid per day.
Yeah.
From just dabbing.
Right.
Month one is getting kind of stable and starting to slow down on maybe some of it. Month two is getting rid of the fentanyl patch, see if you can handle the blood and the cannabis as you start. But then they start making these little jars of the blood as they don't take.
Right.
And they get to the point pretty soon. And these are people that are like, I'll never get off all the cannabis. You don't have to. Wouldn't it be better if you just reduced? It would be way better if I was taking only 2 milligrams of blood a day versus 8. I can't live my life this way because of the constipation, the lack of sleep. So their quality of life changes through that, too. The first thing people come back to me who are on opiates and narcotics or kids with seizure disorder, the first thing their parents tell me, no more constipation. Or it really changes. Or it helps at least a significant percentage. And that's huge because that's toxic.
Yeah.
You have your little second brain down there.
Total toxic.
It's horrible.
Life changing.
Get shitty thoughts.
Oh, where is it? There you go. I know. He'll be here all week. Well, actually, just for the next couple minutes.
Back to the kid.
Back to the kid. Oh, man. So, yeah, low and slow, people. Don't freak your grandma out. Fun.
Yeah.
Right.
Don't scare grandma.
No, and that's the thing. A lot of people will tell me, too, I just want to give my grandma one. Don't give someone cannabis unless you let them know.
Yeah.
Don't do that with anything.
Yeah. Exactly. Don't do that with anything.
It's
you
not
know?
Right. It's not fair.
It's not. It isn't. And it's
and
what
you
scares
your body, your choice.
Yeah.
You know,
amen. Your body, your choice. And it's what scares
so many
people.
A good way to bridge that with a senior.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Out. And then they're more willing to go into training.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And
right.
Take your time. Don't
yeah.
push so hard. You know it'll be helpful, but you can't change somebody's mind. It's their choice, it's their body.
Right, and you're more likely to turn them completely off
yeah.
of it.
Yeah, and if they're approaching you about it in the first place, man, be easy.
That's an unfortunate thing, and it can happen so easily
yeah.
when you're introducing somebody to this, depending on their
yeah.
perspective and how much their body is willing to accept on that first introduction comfortably.
Comfortably is the main.
Always have a choline supplement like citicoline or, and choline can be found in the brain health section of a vitamin store, CHOLINE.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get it in beets, can be a hamburger, and that's another way to kind of go. They say black peppers help, and there's other things. But these choline supplements will really knock out a lot of the euphoria. They raise your acetylcholine levels in your body. Some of that euphoria knocked out. And so if you're starting somebody new, have a bottle of $10 or less, you
yeah.
know, and so, you know, 15 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with a new patient, always try to keep that on hand. And with my cancer patients, I get them taking it typically along with it in the beginning so we can get them and titrate them to a large dose.
Well, and I'm just going to throw this out there, too. There is nothing wrong with a little bit of happy. And some people
right.
want that euphoria. Some people need that to take them away a little bit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This world, this planet, this universe can be rather stressful. And sometimes you just need a little bit of a break. You need to giggle. You know, you want to
yeah.
get
when
with
people,
your girls. You
when
know,
people tell me they
night.
Have an adverse effect or they don't want to get out, I feel sad for them.
Yeah. Well, it's just because
I love
they,
it.
I know, I love it too. They don't understand it. They don't understand it, and I think, you know, and maybe they've had a bad experience. We hear that all the time. Oh, you know, someone gave me this candy bar, this cookie, or this brownie, and ate the whole thing, and they had this horrible experience, and I'll never do it again. And I, you know, that's really sad. Because it
and
really could have helped you.
You've seen that with people being introduced to dabbing, you know, and
oh,
I would
Lord.
Just recommend to anybody
dab will
just
do
trying it the first time, just be very... very
small
with
small.
It.
Baby steps.
You don't
baby
have to
steps.
Take the whole
but
thing they give you.
Steps.
And it's unfortunate that we do have to have this great advice like choline on hand
yeah.
or comfort food that they're, you know, ready to eat right away. Cereal is
take
great.
A tiny hit
or a shower.
Don't,
yeah.
don't go.
Yeah.
But if
crazy.
They get to that uncomfortable place, you know,
yeah.
have a backup.
Have
plan.
A friend around.
Yeah.
He's going to just hang with you.
Take a nice warm shower.
So, and
take
a lot
nap.
Of the seniors that have expressed this to me, I offer to sit with them when they put to get you in a
yep.
cup of tea or coffee. You
do that
too. And have a cup of coffee. And they're, when they get giggly, they're like, oh, this isn't at all what I thought it was going to be. And I'm like, I know, right?
right. At the right amount,
yeah.
you get, you know,
get a little bit of happy.
You know,
yeah.
what you need.
Yeah.
And 2 or 3 drops is amazing what it will do to me. Again, you can mindful of those. And a lot of people just
relax. And that's what we all need to do this year, people. Just relax.
Yay!
Oh, my goodness. Thank you, Michael Bowman. Thank you so much for both of you for being here. We love the show, and we love you guys, and we really appreciate you tuning in each and every week. We're going to be at 5 years for each day one day in March, and that will be an exciting show. Yeah, we'll make sure you don't fall asleep for the show. We didn't even get through empathy. We'll get to that next week. I did do a little sneak preview, so we'll get there. We had we had live guests, so we could go with that. Anyway, thank you for tuning in each and every week. Go out and support your local cannabis health center at 4826 East Broadway Boulevard. We're right out front, Tumbleweed Health Center. give us a call, 520-838-4430. Most importantly, remember,
be smart,
be safe,
and
educate. We love you guys. Happy weed day. Let's smoke a bomb.
Woo!